Hey, everybody. We're back with another commission podcast. This time, another Sean Ray production. We're going to have to eventually total everything up and see. Like, he might be in the double digits now. I don't know. I felt like the last 3 months of my life, I've just been doing... I've been working for Sean Ray.
We need to, like, dedicate a wing of the website to Sean Ray. The yeah. Sean Ray Memorial? He's still around, right?
The Sean Ray Future Memorial... Right. Library room of Web Bald page. Move.
Yeah.
But he wants us to watch, he wanted us to watch the 1991 Oliver Stone film JFK, starring Kevin Costner with yet another ridiculous accent.
Yeah.
He's going for.
It was fine. Like, I don't know. I don't want to shit on the man's accents. Like, okay. I think it's worse actually in 13 Days. I think that this movie is not nearly as bad as his Boston accent.
Okay, sure. But is that because you're more familiar with the Boston accent? What is a Louisiana accent
could
even?
Be. Yeah. I feel like John Candy really nails it.
It's funny because he's got a drawl that does not sound like it's a Southern. Like, he's definitely, like he's got
like a Northern drawl?
An East Coast drawl, yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
A California drawl.
California drawl. So I'm going to let him introduce it because he doesn't have much to say. He wants us just to do a deep dive in this film. And God knows this film's deep enough to dive into. It is, if you've never seen this film, buckle up. I first saw this as on VHS, and it was like a 2 VHS set. It's one of those films. It's three, almost 3.5 hours long. He says, hey, Jim and Aaron, I'm going to ask permission to commission Oliver Stone's director's cut of the 1991 JFK. Like I said in the previous email, it's 3.5 hours long. I can write a book on what goes on in the film, but instead of doing that, I'm just going to ask you guys to consider and dissect the different theories discussed of the who, what, and why surrounding the assassination of JFK.
Oh, Christ. See, I can't do that.
Please be as thorough as possible. I understand this can be daunting.
Here's what you can commission me to do. You can commission me to watch a movie, do a bit of research, and to give my thoughts on the film.
Mm-hmm.
What you cannot commission me to do is reopen the investigation
into the Warren Commission,
a murder conspiracy. Yeah, I can't do that. It would take me literally years, years to properly research and feel like I had a grasp on this thing enough to say, hey, definitively, here's what I think about these facts and fabrications.
Fair enough. Hope you aren't fazed by Kevin Costner's Louisiana accent. Let's talk about our personal history of this movie. I have seen this movie probably about 10 times. And I remember the first time I saw this movie, it made me as angry as anything I've seen in my whole life, because I was I was under the illusion that Oliver Stone, maybe dramatizing basic facts, but his narrative and he wouldn't just make up a fact. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't just repeat a bald assertion of something as the truth. And this is this is just a crazy, it really wraps you in. Cause like, I'm of the opinion that even though this is a 3.5 hour film, it doesn't feel like it. Like, I'm always shocked when we get to the Donald Sutherland scene, which is roughly in the middle of the movie. And that's a long, meaty scene, but it it goes like a freight train.
Mm-hmm.
Like, once you get to the Walter Matthau, like, senator plane trip where he essentially softballs the Jim Garrison character, the conspiracy theory, the movie just doesn't really stop. It bogs down here and there, but it's just always moving on to the next thing. If you're unfamiliar, this is the story of real life prosecutor Jim Garrison, who is the only person who's brought a criminal trial in the crime of the assassination of John F. Kennedy. And if you're familiar with JFK conspiracy theories, this film has all of them. All of them. It's also unbelievably star-studded, and like pretty insane over-the-top performances for some of these people too. You've got Kevin Costner playing Jim Garrison. You got Kevin Bacon playing a young gay man. Tommy Lee Jones, Joe Pesci playing Ted Cruz's father. Laurie Metcalf from Roseanne. Gary Oldman as Lee Harvey Oswald, and he's amazing.
Yeah.
Michael Rooker is in this film. Sissy Spacek is in this film. Jack Lemmon is in this film. John Candy giving a awesome what would you call that performance, like a lawyer turned jazz lounge
this is a guy performer. Who spends 95% of his waking hours in a jazz New Orleans jazz bar,
and he speaks in like this belter Creole. It's like
that's amazing.
You got the right ho ho but the wrong ta ta daddy, and right. It's got Donald Sutherland, it's got Ed Asner, it's got Bill Murray's brother playing Jack Ruby.
Yeah.
Just Wayne Knight.
Yep.
I mean, this film, Vincent D'Onofrio, John Larroquette, this film almost single-handedly makes the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon game work.
Right.
Because there's so much star power across so many different generations. It's also generational. Mm-hmm. Like fucking, you know, linking Kevin Costner and Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau in the first degree, like pulls this thing into old Hollywood. It's incredible. It's incredible. But it purports to be the telling of this prosecutor's one man war against the vast cover up from multiple forces. Like the movie is never too clear about what exactly, who are the ones pulling the string, or if it's involving, it could be involving the Russians, the mafia, shadow elements of the CIA,
Lyndon
Deep Spade,
B. Johnson,
the president, vice president himself, of the United States, yeah. Bobby Kennedy's brother, or being Bobby Kennedy, perhaps, Cuban revolutionaries, it goes pretty far and wide about who, and like, I think one of the central things is like, maybe this is intentionally engineered. So all these independent actors came to one thing. So it's like that there's this one point where he says it's like a firing squad, a military firing squad, where you got 5 riflemen and only 4 bullets. So everyone's got plausible deniability. It wasn't my bullet that actually did the thing. Like I said, my history is I watched this movie as a very young, uneducated, unsophisticated person that hadn't paid much attention to politics, and it blew my fucking mind. I then went on to read Jim Garrison's book, On the Trail of the Assassins. I got really deep into conspiracy theories, and then I thought, before I start a violent coup against my government, I should look at the other side. And I found quickly that the balloon deflated, and almost every substantive claim that I investigated about this movie has at least an asterisk, at most, at worst, like it's just an outright fabrication. Jim, what's your history with this movie?
I don't know that I've ever actually seen this whole movie, probably because it's depending on which version you watch, 3.5 hours long. I think I know that I've seen clips. I know that I have seen, you know, the magic bullet scene.
Right.
I don't think I'd ever seen it in its entirety. Mm-hmm. So this is really my first full viewing of it.
Right. What did you, because I will say that even though I don't think the movie is factual, I still think the movie raises a lot of questions, and every single time I watch it, I get a new kind of wrinkle in my understanding of the geopolitical situation I find myself in. And like I find new problems. Like at first my problems were essentially kind of like factual problems, but then like as I've grown as a person and I start seeing like, man, there's a lot of unflattering portrayals of homosexual men in this film. Mm-hmm. Almost to the point of like, this is like blood libel against the gays. And I'm kind of shocked that, you know, Oliver Stone would traffic in that kind of thing. But I still think, number one, the film is incredibly well made, incredibly well acted. I can't even imagine Oliver Stone, how much cocaine he had to do to write this script. Has a fantastic soundtrack by John Williams.
Oh, does it?
Which, by the way, this is one movie you can throw into people's face when they say, Jim, that all John Williams soundtracks sound the same. So I think it's as a piece of art, it's amazing. What do you think of it?
I think this movie is a triumph of editing and maybe a failure of scope. Mm. I think surprise, surprise, in a 3.5 hour movie that is 90% dialogue over scenes of flashbacks and dramatizations of the things they're talking about, this scene tries to cover, or this movie tries to cover, too much ground. I think what they should have done is present their most coherent, best argument. Because make no mistake, this is Oliver Stone's attempt to convince the public that there is a conspiracy regarding the assassination of JFK. That is the intent of this movie. And so he's compiling all of the evidence. What I think he should have done is compile the most compelling evidence, cut this at like 2.5 hours, and leave the other stuff on the cutting room floor. Leave the color.
I think that's what the trial attempts to do. It's like, this is the distillation of the most persuasive evidence. And
yes.
You know, because like, man,
I will say that this movie lost me many times along the way, and not because I wasn't buying what it was saying, but I wasn't getting what it was saying because it was so very convoluted, because they tried to get like the connections to the CIA. And I know some of this is very important to the motivations of the factions claimed to be involved. But it lost me somewhere along the way. Like, why do we have to have a dummy Oswald? Like, what does building this fictional character of Oswald have to do with the actual assassination? And you could have told me he was a patsy without telling me that they were building a fictional version of him
CIA
while he was in Russia.
Essentially building a straw man version of Oswald. So they, you know,
that has nothing to do with like the persuasive part of the case, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But they spend a good 20 minutes on that. And in the director's cut, they actually expound on it even more. They went back and they added like minutes of scenes that, in my opinion, didn't need to be there to make a compelling case.
I think as someone who's seen the movie 10 times, that makes sense the more you see it. That, like, because there's a lot of threads where in the first third of the movie, when they're doing the initial investigation, there's a lot of like very contradictory things about Oswald, which, again, Gary Oldman is Lee Harvey Oswald.
No, he's great.
He looks just like him. He sounds just like him. Like, seeing him reenact some of these historical scenes is just fucking amazing. It's one of my favorite performances of his of all time. But there's a lot of inconsistencies. Like, is this guy a patriot Marine intelligence officer? Is he a communist rabble rouser? Is he just a crackpot? I mean, that's what, when I watched this movie this last time, because it's been about, I think I watched this movie about 4 years ago. Like, I watched it with Cecily on some sleepy winter afternoon. But I was struck by how schizophrenic the Lee Harvey Oswald portrayal, or not portrayal, but like the fact line is in this movie, but how neatly it's explained if you just think that Lee Harvey Oswald is a bit of a crazy crackpot. There are some things that, like, I've never really sat and researched to my satisfaction, like the movie, but part of it, because I started giving up because I got to so many things where like a JFK just made, or Oliver Stone has made shit up. But if true, the assertion that they made about Oswald essentially renouncing his citizenship and then coming back to America several years later with a Russian wife and just, you
just
know,
waltzing back in,
just undoing that and getting his Russian wife into the country seems fishy. But it could be, if you look that up, that that's just a detail that Oliver Stone is making up or stretching, because, you know, because otherwise, I think what that duplicate Oswald is trying to do is explain the things that don't fit with the narrative of him being a patriot that was an intelligence officer that was trying to spy for Russia, or no, spy for America in Russia, and then the CIA, all the communist rabble rousing bullshit that he was doing for like Guy Bannister was this double, you know. So I think that they're trying to like like Oliver Stone's like, I understand that this portrait of Lee Harvey, like, this could be true or that could be true, but they both can't literally be true. So let's go on this deep dive of this CIA duplicate effort. And that also explains, I guess, there's some discrepancies in the official record about how tall Lee Harvey Oswald is.
5'11", 5'7", who knows?
Who even knows? Like, that's like, you know, and again, I think, can we talk about just conspiracies in general?
Sure.
Because, like, I have been aware of, because, like, you know, as growing up as a Jehovah's Witness, surprising a number of my friends were into conspiracy theories.
Like, what do you mean when you say into conspiracy theories?
I mean, like, I had a couple friends that thought that the moon landing was faked.
Okay.
That the there was a face on Mars, and that pointed to an alien base and human civilization being there at one point. The JFK.
Where's the conspiracy there?
That NASA, NASA knows about it and they're suppressing it because
they know
people
about the aliens.
People found out that there's an alien. I mean, that's okay. I mean, that would be pretty mind blowing if. If the world government was suppressing the fact that there's aliens on Mars.
Can't disagree with that, yeah.
Big if true. Obviously a JFK conspiracy theory, and as I was getting out of that world,
The 9/11
conspiracy was whipping. I think you and I are thinking of the same people.
Yeah.
And I've always, because, you know, and so I've gotten, like, I've done a lot of research into, like, the moon landing theories conspiracy, because that's one that I'm personally interested in, you know, and it's what I'm going to use this as a neutral example, because it's not really political. It's just essentially, you know, it's a matter of science. Like, they take a lot of unrelated facts that seem true. Like, for example, why aren't there stars in the background of the astronauts? Like when Neil Armstrong is standing there holding the U.S. flag, and you can see the lunar landscape, and you can see the black backdrop of space. Like, we're on on Earth. If I take a picture of that sky, I want to see stars.
It's because the people who dressed that set didn't think that there might be stars in space.
That's right. You know, and that's again, like, that's the perfect rebuttal. Like,
right,
they're staging all this shit, and they
to make you think, and they forget an obvious thing like that. Yeah.
They whipped up all these suits and all these rover technology and all this, like, elaborate soundstage, and they got Stanley Kubrick, who fucking made 2001.
Little known fact: no stars in Stanley Kubrick's 2001.
Right.
No stars anywhere.
Right.
Try and find them.
And they're gonna miss the stars. When it turns out that, like, and I think that this is something like people would intuitively understand nowadays. Like, go out with your webcam, point it at the sky, take a picture. All right, you'll see at the night sky. You might see some stars. Mm-hmm. If there's the moon's out, focus your camera on the moon. And then take a picture. Mm-hmm. Guarantee there won't be stars, because the moon is so bright it overwhelms the camera's ability to expose them both.
Look up at the sky, but have a street lamp in the shot.
Right.
Yeah.
So, like, the astronauts' bright white uniforms, as well as the bright lunar surface, completely blots out the camera's ability to pick up stars. That's just one example. Yeah. You know, and they, you know, just you go on and on and on. But people have no experience with, you know, something like that, like a singular event, like a moon landing. So things that don't match up to the Earth experience seems like they're cover-ups and explanations. Anytime you explain it, it seems like it's an attempt to explain away common sense. And there's a little bit of that in this film, where Kevin Costner, he says, well, the Warren Report will tell you that with some fancy NASA nuclear laboratory experiments that a bullet can do this, that, and the other. Well, NASA tells us a lot of things that are fucking weird, but also true.
Right. This is the number one problem I have with this movie.
It's an appeal to ignorance.
It is. It's appeal to common sense, which common sense is one of the worst methods of detecting truth that we have.
Right.
It's completely fallible.
Right.
Any number of people can think of things that are counterintuitive. You look at, like, there's this place in my hometown called Gravity Hill.
Right, yeah.
And you go onto this stretch of road that appears to be a valley between two hills. Mm-hmm. You park your car, you put it in neutral.
At, like, the bottom of the valley.
At the bottom, at the lowest point of the valley, and your car appears, based on common sense, to be going backwards up a hill.
Like, and like a 15-degree... like a 15-degree... It doesn't even look like it's... Like, it's definitely, like, rolling uphill.
Yeah, it feels and looks like you're rolling uphill. In fact, you're not. What you're doing is you're rolling downhill on an area that looks like you're rolling uphill.
Right, because the way the background, the way the road goes, the way, like, that the it's laid in the valley, it's an optical illusion, essentially.
Right. That common sense would tell you that something is wrong with gravity there.
Right.
When, in fact,
it's not. There's a gravitational anomaly.
And he, at the end of this movie, during the court scene, which is one of the least compelling things I've ever seen, partially because of this, partially because of other reasons I'll talk about, but he is asking you to throw appeals to science out the window.
Right.
Forget everything that the educated people would tell you and think with your gut. And that, in my opinion, is dangerous thinking. When he tells you black is white and white is black and you need to think that way, that is the exact problem we are living through right now, with truth and fact being completely ignored, simply because it doesn't feel right.
Right. Yeah, no.
That's the number one problem I have with this movie.
And the other thing is, like, you know, you look at my, you know, conspiracy theories are all, a lot of this is driven, like, he takes all these eyewitness accounts where they're hearing gunshots coming from over here and gunshots come over there and smoke. Like, eyewitnesses are terrible. Because they don't understand how gunfire reflects off of buildings. And they see smoke rising from the fence and they don't think, oh, those are hobos smoking over there. It's a gunfire. And I heard a gunshot reflecting over. And you know, gunshots also, like, by the time you hear, like, it takes time for sound to travel that people don't often think about. And in an instance like the Dealey Plaza, where you've got all these different angles and you're talking about distances where you're going to have a half second or more delay between things happening and you hearing it. There's all kinds of room for people to be. So you can find 40 people that say you heard gunfire from the grassy knoll or you heard this or that or smoke coming from it. What does that actually mean? Is that enough? Sure. Like, there's just a lot of, like, misuse of the evidence, and like, and you got to think a guy like Jim Garrison, who's a prosecutor, he says a lot of things. Like, I've often wondered why people think that just because a woman is a prostitute, her eyes don't work. Well, that's not what people think.
Right.
People think a prostitute has leverage that she can have over her. She might be giving this testimony in an attempt to get a lesser appeal for something else. She might be willing to take a bribe to trade her testimony. Like, it's the fact that
that's a straw man.
Yeah, it's a fact that you've got to, like, you know, and I'm not saying that there's not a little bit of truth to that, but there's a little bit of truth to everything. And you know,
and this is why I have such mixed feelings, because out of one side of my mouth, I'm going to say, fuck this Jim Garrison guy for asking us to throw, you know, rigorous mental discipline out the window and think with our guts. On the other hand, I'm going to say things seem fishy here and conspiracies are a possibility.
Right.
And so I don't think you should simply buy the official story because the scientists say, and it's official.
Right.
However, I think there's some line there where you cross either side and you're a lunatic.
Right. And then, you know, like, there are.
So I have very mixed feelings on this film and conspiracies in general.
I think here's my, because I think there's obviously conspiracies. Like, you know, for a long time, the MK Ultra project was considered a lunatic fringe conspiracy theory.
Right.
And it turns out it's true. The fact that, you know, the United States knowingly exposed people to radiation as essentially an experiment, and exposed marginalized populations to disease and stuff as an experiment. Like, those seem like crazy conspiracies, but they're true.
Exactly.
But my rule of thumb is the odds of the conspiracy happening increase with the increase the smaller in scope it is and the smaller amount of time you're dealing with. As a conspiracy increases in scope and increases in amount of time it's been exposed to daylight, the odds that it's a conspiracy start shrinking, you know,
simply because people can't keep secrets.
So yeah, and people start having second thoughts, and people that were true believers start thinking about how fucked up things were, and then they start, like, you know what, but like MK Ultra, like, that was compartmentalized to maybe a few, like, 100 people. And, like, how many people actually knew the full scope? Like, you know, maybe a few dozen. That's something that you can keep a clamp on. Like, but even then, like, we eventually know about it. We eventually knew about all those experiments. We eventually knew that Howard Hughes was paid to recover a Russian submarine. Like these conspiracies, again, the bigger the scope they are and the more time you have from the to unfold, the less likely it is. Like, so things like the moon landing and JFK conspiracy, especially when there's reasonable, like, it's not unreasonable to ask questions, it is unreasonable to, when you get those answers, to continually just try to reinvent how it can still be a conspiracy. Mm-hmm. And this, I think, movie, if you look at it critically, you can see that they are throwing 1,000 things against the wall and hoping 2 or 3 will stick.
And that's why I say I think they should have pared it down a little bit. They mm-hmm. being Oliver Stone, mm-hmm. pare it down, show me the 2 or 3 things that definitely stick.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe dispense with the other things that right. are less credible.
Right.
But let me go to this idea of, you know, fabricating evidence and stuff, because there's a scene in this movie which is an outstanding scene. It's manic, it's unhinged. Joe Pesci as David Ferry.
Oh, it's a mystery wrapped in a riddle inside an enigma.
Yeah. It's a fucking amazing scene. And that performance,
oh God, so good.
Is glorious. Yes. That fucking Wolfman acts the shit out of that scene.
Yes, he does.
But this scene is entirely fabricated. There is David Ferry, as far as I understand, in the small amount of research I was able to do for this, never, like, took it to his deathbed, said, I was not involved in this.
Right.
So, and I feel like a large portion of the movie hinges on a confession from a guy who never confessed. It's just right. pure fabrication for this film to support a claim that Oliver Stone wanted to make.
Yeah, and, like, you know, the fact that, like, there's so many mysterious deaths involved in the JFK conspiracy, like, you know, when you're talking about thousands of witnesses and material people involved in this investigation mm-hmm. and the passage of time and actuarial tables, it's actually not unusual for this set amount of people to die. It's just that anyone that dies gets the...
specific people? I felt that was one of the more compelling things, okay. is the timing of the deaths and the key players who died. Like, yeah. when all of your witnesses end up turning up dead,
mm-hmm.
that, to me, smacks of wiping out some evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the proximity to the event, I guess. Although, it is years out, right? Like, mm-hmm. we're talking, okay, the assassination happened in 63, the investigation happened in 66... 60, mm-hmm. 68, like yeah. those few years in there, mm-hmm. 66 to 69.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe, I mean, when you're talking about those time scales, people die.
Well,
especially old people. Like, Clay was dead 5 years after this whole indictment thing.
Right.
Or not indictment, trial.
And Dave Ferry, like, you know, that was one of the things, like, he already was, you know, suffering from cancer before the assassination.
Was it alopecia? He had this disease. The reason he looks like the fucking Wolfman here is because he's got this disease where all his hair falls out, and he's got a homemade wig.
He's got, like, his eyebrows are drawn on with a grease pencil. Like, if you've seen pictures of him, he looks like a crazy character.
He does. And he is a crazy character.
But I just, like, the movie does use these things where, like, the first thing that, like, is really this solid, concrete, like, evidence of a conspiracy is when Walter Matthau plays a senator happens to be flying next to Jim Garrison. And he essentially gives him the broad strokes of conspiracy. The fact that Patton Oswalt... Lee Harvey Oswald was not a great shot, and mm-hmm. this rifle is a notoriously unreliable rifle, and the FBI's best marksman couldn't make this shot, and the bullet was pristine, and it changed direction and travel. I want to talk about the magic bullet theory, because it's the one that I've done the most reading on. It's the one... and, like, it is true. Like, if you look in Jim Garrison's Trail of the Assassin, he shows you the magic bullet, and he shows you the bullet, and it looks pristine.
Okay.
The problem is, if you take that bullet and you turn it 180 degrees, the other side of it is completely fucked up, like Two-Face from Batman.
Why would he do that?
Because he's lying. Like, that's the only, that's okay.
I mean, if he's straight up lying for, you know, as the opponents of his claim, publicity,
because,
like,
that's
political
the thing, like,
gain.
You can't say that's a pristine, but you could say that, like, it's not as deformed as you would expect if it went through Kennedy's collarbone and this guy's wrist, like, and, like, all this other stuff.
Okay.
But, like, there's been ballistics tests done on it, and you can get, like, it's not a typical result, but in a world, like, it's also a not way, like, it's not a one in a million result from shooting through that much flesh and tissue and whatnot as well. Hmm. The other thing is, they say, like, he has this thing where he stages Newman from Seinfeld and his other prosecutor in, yeah, like, sitting right back in front of each other, and he says, oh, look at the bullet, it comes out here and then takes a 90 degree turn and goes over here and pauses for a minute and comes like. The fact is, if you go and see the motor car that Kennedy was in, the physical layout of the car does not match that courtroom. Kennedy, mm-hmm, set his, he was elevated like 6 inches up and was sitting like a, like 8 inches to the side of this, the guy that was in, and it's actually a straight, all those injuries happen in pretty much a straight line. Hmm. The slight deviations can be explained by a bullet hitting a bone and starting to tumble, but it's not this like crazy wormhole shit that Jim Garrison, because just because, you know, the physical model he used to represent reality did not match reality.
Well, I think it's interesting because he doesn't get the Zapruder film until way late in the movie.
Right.
Which, if you already have a mental model of how this all works in your, right, head, because you've read documents that, right, have detailed the wounds, right? Yeah. And you've got this idea of what a basic car looks like.
Sure, sure.
Then you start to build in your head a scenario in which the bullet must be magic.
Right.
And then when you see the Zapruder film, you don't notice the details where maybe he's sitting up a little higher, or his coat is bunched up, or he's hunched, right, over, or the guy's got his wrist in a certain spot.
Right.
You're looking to verify the notion that you have in your head. Mm-hmm. And this is true on both sides of the conspiracy theories, I, mm-hmm, think. Like, people, mm-hmm, who deny them flat out, mm-hmm, will say it couldn't be true because of these details and these details, and they're running, mm-hmm, off a model they've built in their head.
Sure.
And they're ignoring things.
Right.
The other side here, I think, is doing it too.
That's what I was like. Because here's the thing. I honestly fantasize about this scenario. Like,
what do you
the
mean?
Lid being blown. Like, imagine, okay, if, yeah, you, yeah, just, because you're interested in something, start pulling at a thread and like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, I'm blowing the lid off of something. Mm. And I'm going to get to this at the end of the, or at some point in this podcast, because I feel like, maybe we'll get to it right now.
Sure.
So every time I hear about a new conspiracy theory, I'm always interested, but I get to the point where, like, there's a certain pattern where unrelated facts that are being twisted, for example, like the, you know, 9/11 conspiracy, the canonical claim is jet fuel can't melt steel beams.
Right. Right.
No, but jet fuel combined with burning office furniture and paper and an insane updraft is fueling oxygen can weaken steel beams to, mm-hmm, where they bend and deform. And then the massive amount of kinetic energy that's released by a giant fucking building collapsing on itself can absolutely melt steel. Mm-hmm. Like, but it's one of those things where, like, you know, when I got around to the JFK conspiracy theory debunking, I would have respected a hell of a lot more if I got to the pristine bullet part and the proponents were just like, you know what, we used to think this was something, but what's turned out that the bullet is deformed.
Right. Dismiss it entirely. Like say, okay, we can see that point. That's not a legitimate argument anymore.
Right. But you go to most like JFK conspiracy sites right now and lunar landing hoax sites, they repeat all the same shit that's been discredited six ways from Sunday. Mm-hmm. Like the fact that the Kodak film and camera used on the moon could not maintain focus on an astronaut and pick up stars. Like, if someone repeats that to you, they're being a disingenuous rabble rouser. Mm-hmm. But like I said, you get to where it's like you start seeing this pattern where it's a litany of facts, and regardless of how many get discredited, the entire litany always comes out. And the theories can continue to evolve, but they never discredit the old theories. It's not like, you know, it's not like today, like, you know, evolution is the primary theory. It's not like there's still scientists that are saying, but also creation, mm-hmm, and but also abiogenesis and all that stuff. It's like, or, you know, like the moon was created by an impact with the Earth. There's not like six different theories that are equally valid about the formation of that's not how like science and facts works. And I feel like that's the thing. Like, if you see this stuff, that's like the details are made up and fabricated, like things that are detrimental to the case are suppressed and minimized. And that there's no, like, unifying theory.
This is the big thing, because I don't think there's any centralized place for discussion of these things. And
right.
I was watching an interview with Oliver Stone, conducted by his son and somebody else. And the son asked him the question, like, in the information age with social media and the democratization, the decentralization of information, do you think that these things are going to get better? That the conspiracies will be harder to maintain, that, you know, the essentially information warfare will become harder. Mm-hmm. And I look at stuff like the election, right? Like the manipulation of Facebook, the manipulation of all these social media avenues. And I go, well, no, because now you're just simply fragmenting the people who you're essentially giving certain people some information and keeping information from them. So like the people who go and do this research on, like, let's say the magic bullet or whatever, and they find out it's not pristine and they put that on the internet. Well, that's on one web page somewhere. And if the people who are reading this argument are not persuaded by the argument, they're not likely to propagate it anywhere else. And so that piece of information only propagates to, like, one side of the equation.
Right.
And those people eventually tend to argue past each other.
Right.
Because they're arguing off of different sets of facts, even, at some point. Like, different sets of perceived fact.
Yeah.
And I think, like, Oliver, sorry, wisely said, I can't answer that question. I don't know the answer to that. And I think it turned out to be the exact opposite of what the proposition was, that it would get easier to determine truth.
Right.
I think the exact opposite has happened. And conspiracy theorists have latched onto that. And I almost wonder, in a way, if JFK, the movie, did not lend a mainstream voice to the people who would claim more dubious conspiracies.
It's funny because, like, you know, Bill Simmons, who I admire a lot and, you know, influenced me as a podcaster, is an unabashed believer of almost every conspiracy you can think of. Okay. And when he goes on, like, Larry Whitmore interviewed him and they got into it. And, like, Larry's like, but Bill, this stuff's been discredited. And the thing is like, this is what you make a point that I was trying to, and I think you articulated better than I did, that, like, if you look at some of these conspiracies, the fan of the conspiracy sees 1,000 questions and problematic issues with the official story. But what really is the case is you've got, like, 991 questions that have been answered and dismissed, and maybe 9 remaining, like, quibbles. But the people that are into conspiracy theory don't ever look at both sides of the issue. So they still see it's the thousandth, you know, it's why Bill Simmons, when he's talking to Larry Whitmore in the year 2018, goes to the fucking pristine bullet. And I, as I'm listening to the podcast, my head explodes because I know that Bill has not even looked at 1 minute of the other side of the equation, of the debunking side.
Right.
And, like, my advice for everyone that believes in conspiracy theories right now is, like, again, I'm Fox Mulder. I want to believe. I want to be told a grand narrative that makes all this insanity make sense. And that's one of the things I think really promulgates conspiracy thinking, is the idea that the world is this uncaring, unthinking place where things just happen. And there's no order and there's no control. Conspiracies say, no, there actually is a group of wise, powerful, well, maybe not wise, but powerful men that are calling the shots, and they're imposing their order and their will on the universe. And if we can just expose them, we can get that control back. Yeah. When the truth is, no one knows what the fuck they're doing.
At best, you can nudge things in a direction you hope it will go.
That's why I think things like, you know, the Cuban Missile Crisis is so fascinating, because when, you know, after Cold War is over and you can go back and look at all the official records and just really see, like, that really no one knew what the hell was going on, and everyone's kind of winging it, and Khrushchev thought this about Kennedy and Kennedy thought this about Khrushchev, and then the generals were on a different side, and, like, it makes sense, and not in a very satisfying way, but it makes sense, and, like, oh yeah, no one really knows what the hell is going on, and everyone has imperfect information, and you have to make, like, life and death decisions right here and there. Like, a lot of weird shit went down in Dallas just because the president got his head blown off.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of shit.
Stressful situation.
Like, there's not a binder. It's like, oh, the president got his head blown off in Dallas. Here's all the official procedures that we do. Also, he's a Catholic, and their family has different ideas about how the body should be treated. And, you know, we also have the nation looking on, shitting its pants. And we're in the middle of this divisive, like, you know, like, it's, they, no one ever thinks about, it's always like, there is an official narrative and we're poking holes on it rather than this is just being largely improvised.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, I mean, the interesting thing, I want to talk a little bit about the motivations that the movie presents for the murder.
Yeah.
Because there quite obviously have to be motivations.
Yes.
And whether that's Lee Harvey Oswald acting as a lone gunman, his personal motivation, you know, anti-communist kind of stuff. Or whether that's a vast conspiracy and the motivations behind the military-industrial complex, I can't say for sure, but it is... I think those are some compelling arguments.
Yes.
Like, when tied with the historical stuff, and I'll be the first to admit, I do not... I'm out of my depth here. Mm-hmm. I do not have the historical, political context for this whole thing, but it seems like the case they present for the military-industrial complex, having built... in their own heads, this plan that they have to invade Cuba, essentially, and JFK coming along and fucking with that plan and planning to fuck with their plans in Vietnam.
Right.
That, in my mind, adds up to a compelling motivation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, motivation is not going to convict you. You need motivation. You need a murder weapon. You need like you need all the pieces to fall together. So I'm not saying that means that there's a conspiracy. I'm saying... that's the first breadcrumb to a conspiracy.
And like, I mean, I'm going to go ahead and make
and
this
that's
point.
Maybe the thing that the movie does best is present the motivations and they do it in kind of the stupidest way possible, in my opinion, which is they have this guy named X just come in and spell it all out.
It seems like that's a shortcut. The Walter Matt, that's the Mr. X is another one where it's like Jim Garrison was out of reasonable avenues to pursue an investigation. And along comes Donald Sutherland.
Right.
Now, I will say that that's one of my favorite scenes.
Because
again, if this movie was true, it'd be the most exciting thing that's ever happened because like our entire society is built upon a lie. Like we had a shining city on a hill and someone took a giant shit on it and named the military industrial complex.
Yeah.
But here's my thing. If you want see this movie, if you want to see it, because it's still an amazing piece of film making, and then go and watch a bunch of YouTube videos on the other side, and you make your own call about who's being factual and what claims are persuasive. But my suggestion is the first part of this movie where it's President Bartlett narrates a bunch of like real footage about the backdrop of the Vietnam War and a JFK assassination. When you get to the end of that, pause it and then watch Ken Burns' Vietnam War documentary, because this movie is pointing and grasping for a question that I think as a society, as we as Americans have not really grappled with, which is the truth that there was a vast conspiracy to get the to get America involved in the Vietnam War. And to lie to the American people about how well that war was prosecuting, how quickly it was being brought to an end, how popular it was amongst the Vietnamese. But that's something that I think is still divides America because, you know, America got divided into two camps. The camps that say that's the other thing that's nice about this is it's a bipartisan issue. You've got multiple administrations across both Republican and Democrats doubling down and increasing because like, oh, if we lose face in front of the and the other thing is like, I think that the Ken Burns documentary convinced me of is like, there weren't very many bad faith actors. You certainly had some, but the idea that the Soviets might take over the whole world wasn't crazy. Like the fact that they would, you know, Pied Piper the world into communism and that would destroy the world and turn it into a totalitarian. It's not like objectively crazy. It's just that was the theory. And no matter how much evidence was presented to contrary, you'd always have the general saying, yeah, but what if, and if we don't fight here, then what? And we've already lost X amount of dollars and lives. If we pull out now, it's going to be for what? it's the sunk cost fallacy. But that, I think that's the conspiracy.
Right, and if you had just given it some time, the whole thing collapses eventually. Right,
and, like, so, and like, no matter, like, the own government's reports, like, there's this throwaway line about, you know, every time McNamara goes to Vietnam, he comes back and gets JFK spun up, because every time he came back there, trying to prove that the war is going well, he came back with, like, that's the whole, the Washington Post movie.
Right.
Like the Pentagon papers. That was the own government's report, the military's own report that says Vietnam War was misguided and unwinnable, and we're in fact not winning it, and we can't win it. But yet, how many more lives are we going to throw away? How many more young men are we going to kill over there? How many, and not to mention the Vietnamese people, you know, like, does, like, I think that's the conspiracy, and we've not dealt with it because we divide into two camps: the camp that says this is bullshit and lies, and the camp that says, we got to support the troops and support our government, right or wrong. And then you started having things that radicalized people, because the fact that the law and order, the government and troops types wouldn't accept the fundamental premise that the war was immoral and counterproductive made them start doing the protest and, like, spitting on the troops. Like, we're still dealing with a lot of, because, like, you know, my dad's a Vietnam era vet. I wouldn't want to see someone call him a baby killer and spit on him because he did what he thought was his patriotic duty. But, like, we're in 2018 now. This past, as the movie says, is now prologue. We should be able to, as a society, go back and see, ah, here's how we fucked up. And everyone can agree on this set of facts. And also, this also neatly explains, like, the fundamental error of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, which... I was a conservative at the time, and I very vociferously supported all of those in that, because I was ignorant of the history of Vietnam, because our fucking country is so balkanized that anytime someone wanted to talk about the failures of Vietnam, I'm like, oh, that's a bunch of liberal bullshit.
Very tune out.
Yeah. So, yeah. Like, I think that this movie hides an actual conspiracy, which is selling the Vietnam War as a bill of goods to the American people. And I think that's that shit. Like, this movie says that, like, we've never dealt with the conspiracy behind the JFK, and we've never dealt with the fact that we are a nation of, we're a fatherless nation, that our father was killed. Like, it's like this big Joseph Campbellian hero's journey that we're all on. Like this is the call to action, and we're, you know, Oliver Stone's like, we're collectively just shrugging. I think he's right. It's just, instead of pinning everything on JFK assassination, it's just like a much bigger and more banal conspiracy of essentially sunk cost fallacy combined with national ego and, you know, unwillingness to pay a political price and say we were wrong, because any party that did that would instantly be swept out of office.
Right,
they'd be held accountable.
Self-preservation, yeah.
And I feel like that's at that point, like, we broke the idea that our leaders should be held responsible. And no one, like I, it's crazy to me, because I will say that, like, you know, I didn't believe that Colin Powell would get in front of the UN and make up a bunch of shit and talk about yellow cake and centrifuges and all this other stuff and, like, weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. I didn't think he would do that. But I was wrong. I think that the Bush administration would fabricate and trump up a bunch of facts and lead us into a war that had no basis. And I can say that because I'm a private citizen and no one's going to come to my house and kill me because I sent thousands of their sons and daughters to die. In the real life, politicians, they have those stakes. And what I think is bizarre is people that participated in what I feel, and what I think the facts support, is a discredited march to war, and especially in Iraq, are now coming back years later and wanting to be taken seriously. Like, I feel like when you make a mistake that big in public office, you should fall, like, maybe not literally in, like, a feudal Japan sense of the word, but you should fall on your sword and go away.
Yeah.
Like, you done fucked up. And I don't want to hear, like, from the likes of John Bolton and Dick Cheney ever again. Because you guys were fucking wrong about the cost of the thing, whether it was necessary, the reasons we're getting into it. So we keep, because of these mistakes that are made around the time the JFK got shot, like, we keep making the same mistakes because we're unable to critically look back at our own past. That's what I think. And if you disagree with me, then, you know, like, I don't, you know, I don't know what to tell you. Like, the Ken Burns documentary is not the end all be all, but I guarantee you, if you fact check his ass, he'll have a much better record than if you fact check Oliver Stone's ass in this movie.
Sure.
Like, probably 90% of the shit that is passed as fact in this film is either made up or very misleading.
Yeah, so let's talk about that, because I got a very icky feeling from the very beginning of this movie where they're mixing documentary footage with reenactments with pure fabrication and dramatization, you know? Like, Oliver Stone will be very open when he talks about this movie, you know, from a fantasy standpoint. He's not hiding the fact that he is making things up, and he is trying to convince you by blending these disparate sort of sources of information, if I can even call them that. And that immediately puts me off of this. When I go, okay, I'm going to have a very, very hard time distinguishing between what is documentary footage here and what is movie, film footage here.
Right.
That immediately made me uneasy.
And it's intentional, right?
It is, like they 100%, blending,
like,
yeah.
And there's some stuff that's, like, very rare to see, like, and I thought it was moving, like, the JFK Jr.'s, as a little boy, saluting his father's coffin. I get still choked up, because that's just, like, a fundamentally pathetic and sad image. And then the Zapruder film. Like, the first time I saw that film, well, I think the first time many Americans saw that film, it was in the context of this movie. It's fucking amazing, jaw-dropping.
Yeah, I mean, I have the same reaction as the courtroom does when he shows
you
it
gasp.
To him. Yeah.
But then they use that in a very misleading way, like, you know, the back to the left, because, like, we all understand you get hit by a bullet, you know, opposite and equal reaction. But, yeah, I just feel like I jumped on your point.
It's okay. I got an uneasy feeling from that, and
he uses every technique, right? Like, he uses the film, the grainy film, fact that, like,
he tries to make it kind of look
you
like
can see,
documentary,
like, footage. And, like, and the fact that, like, Gary Oldman looks exactly like Oswald, and the fact they restage a lot of things, like, shot by shot, painstakingly, to blur that line between fiction and reality to great effect. This is a fantastic work of propaganda, I think.
No, I think this movie is expertly made.
Yes.
I want to be clear about that. Like, I think when I said at the beginning it's a triumph of editing, I think that's true. I think with the fucking sheer amount of information and the connections you have to make, it was a brilliant choice to do kind of this take you out of a scene that's in progress that you understand is going on, a conversation that he's having, you know, Garrison's having with his crew, and intercutting it with you know, things that I hate to use this word, prove to us as an audience,
right,
that what he's saying is true. I think that's a great way to go about it. And I think it's a very inspiring final scene in the courtroom. But I have major, major issues with the courtroom scene, and it's not the magic bullet. Can we talk about that scene?
I want to talk, like, I mean, if you want to jump around, because, like, there's a lot of set pieces, like the Dave Ferry interview, the Clay Shaw being called in on the rainy Sunday, I think is another.
Yeah.
Like, where they cut Jim Garrison, like Kevin Costner asking, you know, Clay Shaw, portrayed by Tommy Lee Jones, questions, and then they show what Jim Garrison is imagining what's happening. Yeah. And there's some wild fucking shit going on here. Mm-hmm. Like, there's this gay sex party that involves Tommy Lee Jones dressed up as Apollo.
I mean, some Caligula shit,
paint.
Right?
Yeah, no,
it's crazy stuff happening.
And like I said, that's why it's like, you know, it's like blood libel against the gays, because, like, this is just, it's all scandalized and sensationalized, and they just seem like the worst kind of people, and they're, like, suspicious, and they're murdering the presidents, and they're fucking each other, like, it's like, and they're doing drugs, and it's just like
it's tying all that stuff together.
There's a lot of moral panic, like, tied up to, like, hey, look at these homosexual men that are depraved and degenerates. Even if that's true, like, and they like freaky sex, that makes you more likely to believe that they'll kill the president, right?
Right.
It's very gross. And it feels like Like I said, I mean, it just in the same way that there's like the blood libel against the Jews is like, look at these Jews, they killed Christ. Like, I feel like there's a, that's exactly the same thing, except for instead of, you know, JFC, it's JFK.
It's interesting to me that you describe those scenes as what Jim Garrison is imagining, mm-hmm. because I had a very much different take. I took that as the movie telling me what is fact, what actually happened.
Hmm.
I didn't get those flashback scenes as Jim Garrison's head. I got that as narrative from the movie,
but
delivering information.
The only possible evidence for any of that stuff was the Willie O'Keefe testimony of Kevin Bacon.
Right.
But he's a lunatic. Mm-hmm. It's not because he's a gay hustler.
But he's not portrayed as a lunatic in this movie.
Yeah, I think he is. Because when he says at the end, you know, he's like, you know, because he's like trying to look for like why he's doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I just don't want this to be misunderstood. Fascism's coming back. That motherfucker Kennedy stole the election.
Okay.
And he's tells you that this guy, like, there's a lot of cautionary tale about young, isolated men.
Or is that just what Oliver Stone believes?
Well, that's the thing. Like, I kind of think that this Kevin Bacon is a composite character.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it's also telling that, like, a lot of the details that he came up with are not things directly from the testimony. It's like, that's what I'm saying. The line between fact and fiction there is blurred. But, like, to your point, I keep on thinking, like, if Clay Bertrand, or Clay Shaw, I can't remember which one is his real name or which one is his alias, is innocent of this, like I think he is, imagine what an experience it is to be on trial for the murder of, and like, yes, he's secretive, and yes, he's evasive because he's a deeply closeted gay man.
And he's being accused of killing the president.
That's trying to be taken seriously as an important businessman, and this mm-hmm. would, like, fucking Louisiana in the 60s would absolutely destroy his career and his life. That's why he's being evasive and lying, you fuck. Mm-hmm. Not because he killed the president, because he's a deeply closeted gay man.
That's fair, yeah.
You know, and like...
in the mid-60s, sure.
Yeah, yeah. Like, there's this, like, vast... like, every single one of them are... You know, I was like it, you get the impression that, like, every single one of the person in the conspiracy are, like... rabid homosexuals. It's like conspiracy.
I mean, it takes place in Louisiana, so
yeah.
I mean, of course, it's New Orleans.
Right. Yeah. Not sure I'm connecting those points, but yeah.
No, I'm kidding, obviously.
Right. But anyway, you're talking about the trial.
Yeah, I want to talk about the trial because it's one of the most ridiculous things that I've seen in a movie ever.
Right.
This trial,
mm-hmm.
who's on trial here?
I know.
Who the fuck is on trial? Is the entire system, is this a, what's his name goes to Washington? Is he putting the fucking universe on trial
here?
He
does have the one sentence where it's like, okay, we don't have a case against Clay Shaw, but I got to prove a conspiracy because if there's not a conspiracy, then I got no case. So let me just talk about
This is Tom Cruise in A Few Good Men. Desperately trying to get Jack Nicholson to admit something, and then Jack Nicholson doesn't.
Yeah, like, yeah.
And the courtroom is just like, what the fuck was that?
Right,
get out, you're in contempt, get that man into jail.
Right.
Like, Kevin Costner in this scene is not prosecuting anyone.
No.
He's going off on a tirade about something that he's angry about, the values in America, the value of truth in America,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And some of his points I support. Some of the things he says are right up my alley. But yeah. Why is the judge allowing this to happen?
I honestly, there again, like, I don't know how much of that courtroom stuff was made up. Like, what?
Probably
kind of
all of it. I mean, I have to imagine that every single bit of this courtroom scene was intercut, mm-hmm, in reality with the judge banging his gavel and saying, mm-hmm, you're out of order.
Right.
Either fucking connect this to Clay.
Mm-hmm.
Or shut your mouth, because mm-hmm, this has nothing to do with the case at hand.
Right. And I don't know. It's also possible that, like, you know, this whole case, like, that, like, the sequence that we saw is, like, essentially 30 minutes of the trial, and the judge is just like, you know, fucking whatever.
They've already shown that this judge is hostile to him.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Why would he allow such latitude in connecting the dots to Clay, which he never connects?
Right.
I think this whole final scene is only there for him to give a big self-righteous speech about the fall of American value,
right,
essentially.
Right.
And so for me, it doesn't work.
Yeah. I mean, we already talked about, like I said, the Clay Shaw interview on Sunday, the Dave Ferry, Pesci so paranoid, was amazing. The other thing I don't like about it, the parts of this movie that start grinding to a halt, like I said, it's like a lot of stuff with the gay agenda stuff I think is absurd, but the stuff that really bothers me and I don't think works is Sissy Spacek's performance is so fucking one note.
Oh yeah,
like they have the same fight like five or like look, you either believe your husband's blown the lid off the JFK conspiracy or he is obsessed with this thing. And I guess you're supposed to because I was struck when I was watching this movie by two things. Like, what if I'm Clay Shaw and I'm sitting there like paying high dollar lawyers to defend me against this lunatic, mm-hmm. and I'm a gay man. And this guy's blowing up my spot and how just like infuriating that must be. And I also thinking like what it must be like to be Jim Garrison's wife, to see your husband like go and like, cause it's not like, you know, like she privately thinks that he might have a screw loose. Like he goes on national TV and kind of gets his ass handed to him. And like everyone starts talking about this lunatic that's trying to bring like that must be terribly hard. I don't know what like whether they stayed married or whatever, or maybe she was like true blue, but like every single time they try to make it seem like she and Sissy Spacek plays it as like, you know, she's not a, I didn't feel like a substantive person. She's just always like, oh Jim, you know, your son hasn't seen you in 6 days, and it's just like, God, it's like Rocky Balboa's wife and all the Rockies turned up to 11.
Right,
like she's just there as a speed bump for the character. Because the other thing is they do this thing where Donald Sutherland says, oh, there's too much light on you, Jimbo. You gotta keep pushing. And it doesn't matter if you got a case, you got to bring the case, you got to stir the shit, which is like their explanation for why the Clay Shaw trial is so scatterbrained. But like, I don't buy it that he was this close to humiliating a New World Order plot. And the worst he got was a guy making a creepy phone call to his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, shouldn't there have been some shots through his windows? Shouldn't there have been some, like, actual attempted... I mean, like, they killed the fucking president in front of the world, dude. Like,
right.
Just because you're a crackpot that's been largely discredited, they wouldn't have a problem with you, like, you know, running off the road and, oh, it's a drunk driving thing. Like, you only need, like, one crime scene investigator to clear that, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, they probably could have taken Jim Garrison out. I don't think he was quite as protected by, you know, the bringing the thunder as X made it out to be. The thing I do want to say about the wife and Kevin Costner, like Sissy Spacek, Kevin Costner, the Garrisons, is that I guess that my read on that whole plot was for Jim Garrison. For Jim Garrison's wife, what is her fucking name?
Sissy Spacek.
Well, no, I mean her first name.
I have no idea. Okay. Mrs. Garrison.
Mrs. Garrison. For her to not understand how he could endanger his family this way.
Right.
Not understand how he could be more obsessed with figuring out this riddle than loving his children and his wife. And by the end of the movie, after they've had the biggest blowout they'll have, to come into that courtroom and see him deliver this passionate
speech.
And
bring his boy, too. So, hey, come see JFK's skull get blown off, kid.
Right. Yeah, they came in at a perfect time. to see that passionate plea for the very foundation of this country and to finally understand what is making him tick. Why? Because, let's be honest, the more important thing to Jim Garrison, more important than his family, his children, his wife, is to see justice done here, right? What he believes would be justice, to uncover this conspiracy,
right,
to essentially recover the country that he thought he lived in.
Right.
I can understand why that would be more important to you than perhaps your family.
Yeah.
But I also understand the point of view of your family not understanding why it's more important than you are.
Yeah, that's why I guess I was trying to get, and there again, I think you more eloquently stated, like, there's two states here. Either Mrs. Garrison believes her husband, and he is trying to uncover the most, destructive conspiracy in the history of America, and he's literally trying to save the Republic.
Yeah.
At which case, you might be afraid, but you can't argue with him on the basis of, like, it's not worth doing. Right. Or, like, it's you missed Bobby's baseball game because you're investigating the death of John. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, she either felt like the movie tried to limp on that to opinion that, like, either like it's almost like she was incurious, like she didn't care.
Yeah, no, she didn't buy any of it at the beginning.
Yeah, and I felt like that was a bad look because, like, you know, either she believes her husband. If she believes her husband, again, she could express fear and, like, but don't ever act like it's like what he's doing is not important, or like Junior's baseball game or Sally's dance recital or whatever the things might have been. He should have taken his attention away from this if he's on a goose chase,
I understand that, and she did, right?
Right.
She didn't believe any of it.
Right.
And so she thought he's on a goose chase and just ignoring his family for no reason.
Right. But then, like, you know, if you can't convince your own wife that, that's what I'm saying. Like, if you're up late reading the Warren Report.
What hope do you have of convincing the public?
Right, right. I don't know. I like another set piece we talked about a little bit is the Donald Sutherland General X.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this is another of my favorite scenes because here again, Oliver Stone deftly takes where Jim Garrison's investigation has essentially come to a stop.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have anything to go on. And this guy comes and says and gives like a plausible rationale for why this has happened. But like, as far as I can tell, this is just Jim Garrison's fever dream. Like, none of this has any basis of fact. Donald Sutherland's character is not a real person. All this stuff is just literally a conspiracy theory that tries to explain the perceived facts that they as they know them.
Yeah.
But it's fascinating. Mm-hmm. It's fascinating stuff. Like, if true, this would be big. It's the problem is it's just not. And they also do, like, again, like, I think that there's a little bit of kernel to truth. Like, Vietnam was a shot in the arm for the aerospace industry and the military industrial complex. There was a lot of treasure pumped into this essentially elective war because, like, you know, here's the thing, which I don't, I mean, I understand in the time, but like looking back critically at our fights against communism, I don't understand why America just didn't let, you know, because it's not like communists, like, I always felt like it was like, it, you know, there's a revolution that was popular with the people. Like, imagine if, you know, all the monarchies in the world went against America because they all lined up against us and just blew us off the map and then said, see, democratic republicanism is doomed to fail.
Right.
We didn't, like, you know, we got, you know, different allies, like the world is because there's like competing interests and whatnot. But like we were allowed to have this experiment. And I don't understand where, like, in South America and Central America and Asia, we didn't let people, like, hey, you want to run communism? Try to run communism.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what if it's better? What if it's more success? Because now
that's the thing. I mean, the proposition of this movie is for the motivations of the
right.
The military industrial complex,
right.
They don't care if it's better.
Right.
They just care that it's not them.
Right. And also that they can rationalize spending billions and billions of dollars that put in their pocket if you go along and fight this war. And like, what do they care if a bunch of hicks from the country die? You know?
Sure.
Because not the elites doing. The elites are going to Canada. They're going to getting the college deferments and doing all this other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Bill Clinton and George Bush didn't fight in the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
Bill Clinton went to Canada and George Bush got in the Texas Air National Guard where he saw lots of active duty, I'm sure. Like lots of conflict, you know. But again, it's a great scene. It's just a scene that should be seen as a work of fiction. Like this movie should be seen like Inglourious Bastards.
Okay.
You know, it's a historical fantasy that makes it feel good about something. It makes you feel good about fighting the industrial complex. But instead, like, people like, did you read Roger Ebert's review?
I did.
All up in this movie's ass.
He thinks, loves this movie.
Yeah, because it told him it validated what he believed to be true.
Mm-hmm.
But there again, it's so, again, the real conspiracy is to get people worked up about this rather than having an honest reappraisal of our involvement in all the different, you know, elective wars that we've engaged in the last half of the 20th century and early parts of the 21st century.
Yeah, the interesting thing about, you know, he Roger Ebert goes, you know, all in for this movie and the message of this movie. I don't necessarily, but I do think that the entire 3.5 hours, because we watched the director's cut, which adds 17 extra minutes on top of an already long movie.
Yeah,
it kept me engaged. Like I, even in those moments that I described where it lost me, it was just on to the next thing and I was back into it. You know, it never felt like there were moments where I lost interest and didn't want to come back to it.
Right. And I, and
so it, from that perspective, it's like a really entertaining, good film.
It's like
well made.
It's like a cylinder of Pringles. Like you just eat, you just keep eating them, and it tastes, and like the dialogue is so good and the editing, the way it moves and John Williams music, like this, these weird menacing horns that come in and like introduce, like just keep propelling you. And there's like all this, some of it gets ludicrous.
That sounded like a TIE fighter, by the way. So I'm back to my, all the soundtracks sound the same.
Right. There's, there's a couple of funny things where it gets like almost in a parody. Like I remember there's one point where Donald Sutherland says, in that document lies the Vietnam War. And you hear this like gunshot as it like overexposes on this crazy fictitious document. And, but like for most of the time, it like, it just, and it's just set piece after set piece of insane conspiratorial thinking, which is in you know, like, it's like, as a person who loves to talk politics with my friends late at night, under influence of alcohol and other drugs, I get the appeal. It's a good fucking time.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. And there's like I thought there's a couple other effective things. Like, at the end, like Jim Garrison's div in his closing remarks. And at one point, Kevin Costner makes direct eye contact with the camera when he goes, "It's up to you," speaking to the jury, but he's actually talking to the audience. And again, like, this is a hell of a call to action.
Yeah. And that's the thing I say, I don't really buy the premise of this movie, but I guess I kind of do. Like I generally feel, and it's not entirely based on this movie. I actually don't know what it's based on. If I'm being honest, I generally feel that there is some kind of fishiness, some weirdness surrounding the assassination, but like, I can't put my finger on it and say what it is. So at the end of the movie, they do a couple of like scrolls of text.
Right.
And they say that the Senate commission actually found 12 years later or something, they found this to there to be evidence of a conspiracy, but they have not investigated it. What the fuck does that mean?
Well, I mean, the other question is why,
and is that true? Is that true?
Why are the JFK? Why are the detailed records of the JFK assassin? I mean, here's where the conspiracy still lives.
Are you sure all these records
are
closed?
Yeah. Why are these records still, and they keep getting pushed back further and further into the future? In fact, like, you know, that's one of the many campaign promises Donald Trump has broken, that he would release the you know, the detailed records. Like, honestly, I've heard some compelling that, like, essentially there are. And there are embarrassing details that would reveal like corruption and like bad motives in the Vietnam War and like a bunch of other stuff that's not to has to do with the like it's not that they're covering up Kennedy. They're covering up just like, you know, broad malfeasance and corruption, which is already disturbing enough. But like,
sure,
I do think that it's ridiculous that it's 2018 and these records are still sealed. Like, there's no fucking
we're 50
way
years out from this investigation.
There's no fucking way there is a valid national defense reason to keep this stuff under wraps.
Right.
It's ridiculous. It'd be like if there was like redacted moon landing stuff, like, you know, like what the fuck? What the fuck is going on here? And like, I don't have a great answer to that. Like, again, I feel like it's more of like Pentagon paper. Like, because again, you know, Nixon tried to suppress the Pentagon papers, not because they weren't true, but because they're devastating to the stated foreign policy goals of the United States of America.
Right.
And to the fact that like it was still I think there's probably stuff that shows like you know, stuff we already know, like the fact the CIA was involved in almost every coup and counter-revolutionary manner of South America, like, and naming names and giving detailed budget accounts, and how, like, the Cold War lasted until the late 80s. So, like, a lot of these fuckers that were complicit in doing that stuff are still alive.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling that when all those people die off, that, you know, this stuff will be, and we'll be like, ah, here's our, but it's not going to be like, you know, Oswald worked with a crack team of six Russian operatives to kill JFK and Dealey Plaza. It's going to be, we had a bunch of liars that were profiteering off the war and protecting their own image. And right. Again, they, and like, I don't even think it's like a conspiracy, like they're insincere. I think people were pants shittingly afraid of what would happen. They like look at, like, you know, a communist regime, an authoritarian communist regime, and be like, Jesus Christ, it would suck to live under one of those, and use that as an excuse to do anything. Mm-hmm. Like any war, any dirty trick, any assassination, any public misinformation campaign can be justified if you're in an existential threat against an implacable foe. I just don't think it turns out that Soviets weren't all that implacable. And certainly some of this banana republic shit we did in our own hemisphere is seemingly indefensible.
Right.
So, and again, that's one of the reasons, like, it's, you know, we're still, like, right now we're starting this whole, like, socialism and communism, you know, like, second Red Scare. And it would be nice to be able to point back and be like, say, you know, well, you know, communism doesn't work. It had its chance in it. But, like, a lot of Marxists will say, how do you know that? Because there's not a single socialist regime that's ever existed that the most powerful country and all of their other powerful allies didn't try to fuck with and destabilize and destroy from within. It'd be like,
I
mean, you know,
I guess my rebuttal to that would be, that's true of monarchies. That's true of democratic republics.
And is it just that we're lucky that one of the first democratic experiments to happen in modern times came about at a time when there was a lot of division within Europe, so that they couldn't ally. Like, you know, if it wasn't for France being our allies, we'd have been fucked. Totally. Yeah. Totally been fucked. Huh. Like, Great Britain would kick their ass, we'd still be a colony. And they'd be like, well, there you go. Democratic Republican. The Republicans just can't, you know, it's just mob rule just doesn't work, you know? But, you know, what's interesting is, like, I think that this is also a movie that speaks to our times, because we are living in, highly fictitious times.
Yes.
That you can't trust anything that's said at any time. And it's about to get worse, because it used to be if you uncovered audio or video evidence that was the smoking gun
or photographic. Yeah.
We are less than a decade. We might actually already be there where a person can see a tape on CNN or MSNBC or God help us all Fox News. And a person plausibly and maybe even correctly say, that's literally not me. Mm-hmm. That is not me in that tape. I am being framed. I'm being set up. I am a patsy.
Mm-hmm.
And what the hell are we going to do, Jim?
Man, I don't have an answer for
because,
that.
Because, like, if people want to say, like, oh, this NASA bullshit of, like, you know, like, try to bullet trajectories, what are they going to do when it's like, well, actually, we've had crypto analysts look at it, and they can tell by these 5 bits that this has been manipulated.
Right.
No one's going to believe that.
Well, certainly Jim Garrison wouldn't have. He would have said, I'm going with my gut, and damn the science. I don't know what the answer to that is, and I think it's going to be one of the hardest questions we've ever had to answer.
Sean, thanks for commissioning this podcast and give us an excuse to bloviate about it, and we'll be back with another commission podcast pretty soon. I think we've actually got the last one of our slate, the Star Wars Episode 3 special features, which will be an interesting podcast that we'll have to approach. Until then, I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See you later.